Welcome to Co-Creating Heaven on Earth, a gathering of today's leading visionaries sharing practical strategies for creating a world that works for all. Share this powerful event with your friends and family and join in our conversation on Facebook at The Shift Network. And now your host, Martin Root.
Hi everyone, it's Martin Root with this session of the Heaven on Earth Telesummit. And before I introduce our speaker, I want to just set a little context here. Sometimes when people discover what their Heaven on Earth gateway is, they think that it's really big. So it could be something like ending hunger, ending war, ending poverty. These Heaven on Earth yearnings, these gateways, ring deep in our souls, even as the roadblocks to achieving them sometimes rise up and sometimes roar up. You know, it's too big, I can't do it, oh my God, who am I? All the stuff that comes up with respect to roadblocks. So how do we get out of those limiting thoughts that something is too big, is too overwhelming, and get into useful actions? The three Heaven on Earth questions that I ask, I want to focus on the third one. The first one is, recall a time when you experienced heaven on earth. The second one is, imagine you have a magic wand and with it can create and have heaven on earth. And the third one is, what if you take simple, easy, concrete steps in the next 24 hours to move that forward? So I want to concentrate in this session on taking small, easy steps and what that's about and what the value of that is. And my guest in this section is Dr. Mark McKergau, a brilliant speaker, a coach, a consultant. He develops new ideas in the fields of leadership, organizations, and personal transformation. He also calls himself a recovering physicist, which I love, which means his work is always sharp and applicable in everyday settings, and I know that to be true about him. So today we're going to focus on the notion of simple, small steps, because Mark has spent years studying the power and the process of little steps and what they can really achieve. So welcome to the second annual Telesummit, Mark McKergau.
Hello there, Martin. Hello, everybody. It's a great, great pleasure to be with you today. I'm looking forward to having this small step conversation with Martin, because there's lots and lots of interesting things about small steps that we're going to uncover. It sounds very straightforward, but actually there's all kinds of ideas that will be coming up over the next 45 minutes or so that are going to be very, very useful, not just for heaven on earth and creating heaven on earth and your part in that, but in all kinds of things that you're doing. Anytime you're working with a situation that seems stuck or tough or difficult or you don't know what to do, very often part of the way of getting unstuck from that is to find yourself a good small step and get on with it. So all of that we're going to be talking about today.
Lovely intro, Mark. Thank you. So let's begin with small steps. First, why? The question just came to me. Why are you so interested in that? What caused you to get into that?
Well, you said I'm a recovering physicist, Martin. That's absolutely right. I was a nuclear physicist for the first part of my career, and I've always been interested in how you create a lot with a little. How can you do things that are really efficient in terms of, you know, you put something in and you get more back? Because that's how the world really gathers pace and gathers momentum. You know, if you do a lot and it creates a little, well, that's going to get hard work in the end, and you're going to run out of steam. But if you can do a little, relatively, and create a lot, then that's going to be really good. And, of course, that's how the beginning of my career was. I was working in nuclear power plants as a physicist, and that is how a nuclear power plant works. It's a chain reaction. You start with a few neutrons, and they then hit some other atoms that create more neutrons, which are other atoms that create more neutrons, and you get this chain reaction expanding and expanding and expanding. And of course, if the chain reaction is uncontrolled, that then becomes a nuclear bomb. And we're not talking about that here, but the idea of doing something that creates more than you put in is really important in all kinds of ways. And of course, that holds true in business too. You know, if your business makes a loss year after year after year, you're going to end up with no money in the end. I mean, maybe you've had a good time on the way, but you're going to have no money. If your business makes a profit, then you can do more business next year, and you can do more business next year, and the business will grow. And so this idea of finding ways that we can do something that gets more back to us for that effort. You know, that's always been interesting to me as a physicist, and it's still very, very interesting to me as a management consultant and a leadership speaker today. You know, that's how we can really make a good difference, by doing a small thing that creates a bigger thing, that creates a bigger thing, that creates a bigger thing. And if we do a big thing that creates a small thing, that creates a smaller thing, that creates a smaller thing, that just everything runs out of steam, then that's actually not really going to work. So small steps, but choosing the right small steps, of course, that's a very important piece of it too.
Well, and that's what I want to focus on here. You know, it seems completely counterintuitive, and yet over the years, Mark, as I've spoken to hundreds, thousands of people about heaven on earth, people will think of big things, the end of hunger, the end of poverty, and I see them, while that is their heart's yearning, their soul's yearning to do that, they don't know where to start because they think they have to solve it all tomorrow. And what you're saying, when I first heard you speak about this, is completely counterintuitive, that a small step can actually make a difference. So
talk
us through why small steps are so powerful, particularly when things are tough, and then what makes a really good small step,
because
you also said that, because there can be small steps that make no difference.
Let's take it a step at a time then.
Sure.
Take small steps here in the conversation, Martin. So the first thing is often people get this idea that if I have a big goal, you know, a really big goal, then it needs a really big step. And there's a kind of neat matching quality about that idea. A big thing requires a big effort. And sometimes things require big efforts. But very rarely do those efforts need to absolutely all happen at once. So all the huge things that have been achieved by mankind, you know, that's putting a man on the moon, for example. Yes, it was a huge effort, but did it all happen at once? Absolutely not. You can trace it back to, you know, Chinese people inventing gunpowder back, you know, in thousands of years ago, the beginning of rocketry and fireworks and so on. And of course, the whole moon program gathered and gathered and gathered pace through visionaries in the 1920s and then experiments in the 1940s and Sputnik in the 1950s and John Glenn in the 90s and so on and so on and so on. So what looks like a big thing actually is a bunch of small things. And every time I look at what looks like a big thing, it turns out that it's a bunch of small things that gather momentum. So this idea that a big goal or a big idea requires a big step is what I'd really, really like to challenge today. On the contrary, I think that big steps are very problematic. So here's the problem with big steps. And anyone who's listening to this conversation today, who's really tried to kind of turn their life around, may have experienced this. Big steps often don't get done. This is the problem. They feel really daunting. They feel really large. We don't know where to start. We're not sure whether we have the ability. We're not sure whether we have the energy. And it gets put off, and it gets put off, and it gets put off. And in the end, very often I experience that people have big steps and they don't get them done. And so here's the theory. A small step that gets done makes way more difference than a big step that doesn't get done.
I don't know why that's so profound, but I get it. It's true. It's true.
So, and also the thing with the big step is then you start beating yourself up for not doing it, and then it gets worse. So not only have you not done the step, but you're now feeling bad about not doing the step, and that then kind of disempowers us to do other things. So this idea, you know, a small step that gets done makes more difference than a big step that doesn't get done. And a small step gives the world something to respond to. You know, we do something slightly different, and that gives the world around us, the universe, the people, the things, a chance to respond to us in slightly different ways. So it begins to create a slightly different resonance or pattern or idea, and it gives people the chance. And you keep thinking, oh, one day I'll do this, but you never do it. Then the rest of the world doesn't really know that you're trying to do it. The day you start really trying to do it is the day that other people and those around you can see something, and now they can respond. Now they can respond. Now they know that you're trying to do something. Now they can know that they can perhaps respond to you in different ways, or and this may be conscious or unconscious, but actually doing something slightly different really is the start of creating new ripples and new chain reactions in the universe. Now, will every small action create an enormous chain reaction consequence? No, I'm afraid not. Some of them just fizzle out. But here's another thing that that's interesting about small steps. You really don't know at the beginning quite what the result is going to be. You know, we don't know whether this is going to be the start of something incredibly profound or a slightly disappointing dead end. But the only way to find out is to do it, is to go there. You know, imagine you're facing loads and loads of doors, and the only way to find out what's behind the doors is to open them. However much you sit and stare at the doors and think hard and pretend, you know, to try and to intuit and whatever, this is not a reliable way of gathering information. This is me, the physicist, speaking in. The reliable way of gathering information is to go and open the doors and have a look and see what lies beyond and engage with it. And if it looks good, carry on. If it doesn't look good, it's okay. We can turn around, go back, and try another door. So that's another advantage of small steps, is that these are little, you can think of them as experiments that we can try out pretty easily, pretty cheaply, and if it turns out that this particular small step doesn't start to deliver, and we'll talk about how to up your chances of that in a minute, but if it doesn't start to deliver, well, that's okay. It's only a small step. You can put it to one side, you can have another think, and you can come up with a different small step that may have a bigger impact, and you've learned something along the way. So this power of carrying out a small step as a kind of experiment, as a kind of, let's see what happens when we do this. This is a fantastic attitude because it teaches you about the world. You get direct feedback very quickly and instantly. You have something that you can do, and then you have some basis to decide what to do next, because should you proceed and carry on down this path, and if it's working, then you can do that. Or if it's really not working and it doesn't feel right and you think, no, this isn't for me, that's okay. You haven't wasted a lot of energy, a lot of time, a lot of money. You can have another think and try another door.
A couple of questions come to mind. I don't know the right language here. It's just a thought came to me as you were speaking. There is the arena of vision, of big goal. I want to end.
And that's very important, by the way. I'm not at all against the arena of vision and big goal. I think that's incredibly important. And we might come to this later, the importance of working with the big and the tiny all at the same time.
That's where I'm going with this. So because the big goal, ending hunger, having heaven on earth, can be too overwhelming for people. I've heard that many times, or it's naive. Those are the two biggies. But you're saying, no, have the big goal, have the big vision, and then the mechanism to engage with it is counterintuitively the tiny, tiny step.
Yeah. And that's what makes it workable. You know, to end hunger, I think there's nothing I could do right now to end hunger tomorrow. I really can't think of anything. But I think of ways I could start to end hunger. They might be very small, they might be very local, but they'd be things that we could start to do. And if we think about the right small actions, then we can make them things that stand a better chance of accelerating and gathering pace and including other people and so forth. So absolutely, I would like to encourage everyone listening to this call today to think big. And in fact, one of the difficulties with some people is they don't think big enough. And think small. And most of the time we spend in our lives thinking middle-sized. And, you know, this is kind of questions along the lines of, where shall I go on vacation next year or something like that. So I call that a middle-sized question. It's a perfectly good question. You know, it's a really good question, and it's about carrying on with the kinds of things that we've always done. If we want to try something new, we want to go bigger and we want to go smaller all at the same time. And I think that's one of your the beauties of your heaven and earth questions, Martin, is the way that they encourage people into that zone. They're thinking both the big and the small all at once. So, yeah, have those really big goals and those really empowering, compelling visions, and then get to work on it right away. Having the vision is only the first piece of it. If you don't get to work on it right away, it's just going to sit there on the shelf.
It's interesting, Brian. Many times I've heard over the years of me speaking about heaven on earth, people saying, oh, that's too big. It's too overwhelming. And what I say is, well, let's put that judgment aside for the second. Would you like heaven on earth? I go, yeah. And then, because the third question, I need to acknowledge you. You gave me the third question of my three heaven on earth questions. And as you're speaking, something else is popping up for me, the distinction between a small step and a tiny step. As I hear myself thinking, it's almost like tiny step is even easier than small step, but
yeah,
it gets me into the game.
Yeah, it gets you into the game, and it gets you into the game quickly, and it gets you into the game relatively cheaply. The tiny step is not going to create the whole thing.
Right.
It is exactly a route into the game. It's a chance to try something, to see what works, to see how that feels for you, to see how that's fitting for you. And then, you know, if the tiny step starts producing interesting results, absolutely, double down.
I give you two examples. One woman was Susan Alima Fryer in Hawaii. She teaches microgreen, how to grow microgreens, little plants that grow in 10 days, very nutritious. What can I do? She said, nothing. You know, I don't know it. And so we talked about what heaven on earth was for her, and then this little light bulb went on, and she said, well, I can stick it at the end of every email I send out. And it was such a tiny little action. Another woman wanted to end violence against women in her county, and wherever she went, nothing would work. And on a telesummit, she was talking about, you know, somebody said, well, what would be a tiny action, which is a penny a day? And they created this program called Making Change, in which she asked people to donate a penny a day to help end violence against women. Another hugely successful thing. So I know that it works. And as I was thinking recently about all the people in projects, Heaven on Earth projects that I've seen over the years, most of them, Mark, are small or tiny, yet they build momentum. And there was one woman who said, you know, I'm now starting to think of phase two because there's so much momentum has been built in terms of taking these tiny steps.
And
yeah.
That word momentum, Martin, is very important, I think, here. This is about building momentum. You know, it's not about the tiny step cracking the whole thing open immediately. You know, but you maybe start to get an idea of how it might go, and if it's really, really running into a brick wall, well, that's all right. Find something else.
The investment is so tiny that it's easy to throw it away.
The investment is tiny, but the potential payback is huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little bit like buying, you buy a lottery ticket for $1, and the payback's 20 million. But the thing is here that you have much more chance of winning, actually, by moving to playing the heaven on earth game and finding small steps. There's many, many different sizes of prize as well. But it's the idea of a little to potentially get a lot is very much what we're talking about here.
I want to move with you now into what makes a good small step. You've done some remarkable thinking about that. Could you go over your list?
Yes. Yeah, so I have five things that make a really great small tiny step, and some of them are very straightforward, and others we'll need to talk about a little bit. So let's start with the straightforward ones. The first thing about a great small step is that it's for me to do. It's not about getting someone else to do something. That might conceivably be a small step, but fundamentally, a good small step is something I can do. Yeah. It's not about trying to get my whole corporation to agree to do something. That's a big step. We want a small step that's for me, or the person listening to this call, whoever that is, for me to do. The second thing, combining on that, is that I don't need anyone else's permission to do it. Some people get really tied up into this idea, well, am I allowed to do that? The answer basically is yes. Unless you are actually thinking about breaking the law, then I would recommend you be very careful. But do you need permission to do this? I hope not. And if you do need permission, then getting permission might become part of a different and smaller step. But it should be something that you can do yourself right now. The third thing is, it's small enough to do in the next 24 hours. Small enough to do in the next 24 hours. Now, I'm prepared to be a little flexible on the 24 hours. And if it's something that you can't do till the next meeting of your bowling club on Wednesday, fine, I'll let you wait till your bowling club on Wednesday. But basically, it has to be something that you can put into play pretty much straight away. And that's a really good way of breaking it down into a really small step. Is it something I can do in the next 24 hours?
Before you go on to the next one, I think that's important to emphasize. When you first told me about the 24-hour notion, it was like, what? And then all of a sudden I got it, because it gets you into action. It puts a short, like almost a wall of you can't go farther than this, which says really, yes, no, I'm going to do it, I'm not going to do it. And I do it, or I don't do it.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. So the 24 hours is not to do with kind of trying to restrict you to only doing something in 24 hours, obviously. But it's about saying, if this is a really good small step, you can get started on it in 24 hours. You know, it shouldn't have to wait till the next budget round, in the spring or something. That's not That's not a small step. There's other things you can be doing. So something that gets things into play really, really quickly. Yeah, 24 hours or thereabouts. You get the idea. And sometimes people come to me with what's feels like a small step to them, but looks like a very big step to me. And you know, if I work with organizations and they say something like, "Oh, right, we'll redo our marketing strategy," and I say, "Okay, is that a small step?" and they say, "Yes," and I say, "Well, is that something you can do in 24 hours?" No. Okay, I say, "So what's a small step towards that? You want to redo your marketing strategy. What's a small step towards that?" And they go, something. Well, maybe we should get the latest marketing data. Okay? Can you do that in 24 hours? No. So what's a small step towards that? Get the marketing data. Okay. Well, we can send out the request for the marketing data. Yes. Can you do that in 24 hours? Yes, we can. Okay. There's a small step. You see how it works. What's a small step towards that? And you break it down. It's not that the big step is wrong. It just needs to be smaller so we can really get it into action quickly.
Mark, the other thing I'm hearing, too, that I've never heard before, is when the step is realized as tiny enough that they can do it, it's almost like they'll fall into doing it easily.
Exactly. It's so straightforward. You absolutely have it within your power right now. And they say, "Oh, I can do that." Right. Okay. When you have that feeling, "Oh, I can do that," that's a really good sign. Anything that feels, "Oh, dear, I'm not sure about that," you know, we're not at a small step yet. It may well be that you're on the right lines, but let's make the step smaller, particularly if you're struggling with it or it feels big, too big or something. You know, if it feels okay to do it, then do it. Fine. I'm not here to prevent you doing things you feel able and capable and confident about. But I often work with people who are in a position where they're not feeling very able or very confident or very capable. And this is how one of the ways that we work with them, which is to make the step smaller. And yeah, you're absolutely right. When they say, "Right, I can do that. Let me get on with that. I want to get on with that now. I really want to get on with that now." That's a good sign that we have.
Yeah, what you're doing is not encouraging them. You're almost, in a sense, holding them back because there's so much energy I can do that right now.
Yes, exactly. So I'm almost trying to hold them back. I'm not, of course, because I want them
right
to get on. But I want them to have that energy. The energy says, "Yeah, I can do that. Let's go on. Let's get on with it." Yeah, that's a good place. Whereas, it feels a bit difficult. That's not such a good place.
Let's go on to step four, then.
We've had steps. Remember, step one was it's for me to do. Step two is I don't need anyone else's permission. Step three is it's small enough to do in 24 hours. Now, step four is that it's generative. And that's a little bit more of a thing to talk about. So what do I mean by generative? I mean, remember we spoke at the beginning of the conversation about the chain reaction type of effect. So there are two good ways of making sure that your step is generative and that it's going to generate some response and start to create something that's a little bigger than the step. The first piece of that is that it should be to do with starting something, not stopping it. To do with starting something, not stopping it. And if you think about it, just stopping doing something, on the one hand might be very hard, but on the other hand, doesn't give the world much clue that you're really springing into action here. And anyone who's ever tried to give up smoking, which I did 25 years ago, anyone who's ever tried to give up smoking knows the difficulty of trying to stop something. Because it's just to stop it without starting something else is very difficult. So, of course, that becomes the secret. Don't think of it as stopping something. Think of it as starting a new thing, whatever that might be. So if your action, and sometimes people's actions are already to do with starting to do something, and that's great. Sometimes they come with an action that's more like stopping something. And I say, no, okay, that's fine. But how do we switch it around so that you're going to start to do something? And then the second thing is it should be something that's either engaging of other people or at least visible to other people in some way. And what do I mean by that? I don't necessarily mean that you have to go and immediately enlist 100 people to your cause, although that might be a good thing to do. But it should be something that gives people a chance to respond to you in a different way. And that can be achieved in all sorts of ways. It can be achieved by talking to other people. It can be achieved to doing something in front of other people or with other people that they will notice. Those other people might be friends of yours. They might be known to you, or they might be complete strangers out in the street or in the shopping mall or in the office or whatever. But something that gets you doing something different with or along with other people. That has a good chance of being generative because the other people can now see you're doing something and they can respond to it. And that's what's going to give you quite a lot of the feedback and the learning from this. You'll get feedback from your own experience too. But the way that other people get engaged on this is really interesting. Here's a little story about that. Those of us with long memories will remember the Live Aid and Band Aid concerts and events in the 1980s, which were about combating the famine in Ethiopia at the time.
Bob Geldof,
exactly. And when Bob Geldof, was the kind of key organizer of this. But the way it came about is really interesting. He saw a news report on the BBC about this dreadful famine, and it struck lots and lots of people, this particular news report. And he was shocked and appalled and wanted to do something, and he started to think, well, what should I do? I'll send them money. And he didn't have much money at the time. His career was on a bit of a slide. So he said, I could donate them the profits of my next record, but that's not going to be very much on the current basis. What am I going to do? What should I do? And he wrestled with this thing, and he wondered and tossed in his bed and couldn't sleep. And then he went to his office, the record office, the next day, where he was trying to plug his latest album. And he just said to the secretary, you see that thing on the TV? And the secretary said, yeah, isn't it shocking? And he said, I'm thinking of doing something. Maybe I could do a special record. And the secretary said, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Who else could be on it? And so now he's not just thinking of his own special record. The secretary has offered the idea, oh, perhaps somebody else should join. And now he's thinking, oh, there's an idea. Who else could be on it? And then a couple of other people in the office joined in and said, yeah, that sounds cool. What do you think? I have to think about that. And so now three people have said, that's a good idea. So now he's thinking, well, I should speak to my wife. And so he phones his wife, which is who was Paula Yates. And she was recording a TV show, a music TV show called The Tube at the time, and with a load of musicians on it, including his old friend Midge Ure of Ultravox. And she said, hey, Midge, Bob Geldof's got this idea. He wants to do this record. And Midge said, yeah, that's great. I'm in. I'll do it. And I've also got the skeleton of a song that we might be able to use. Ah, okay. So now we have several people and half a song. And it went from there. And it was because Bob Geldof mentioned it to the secretary that he was kind of struggling with this and put out an idea that got a response, is how the ball started to roll. And if Bob Geldof had had all that sleepless night and worrying and then hadn't said anything to the secretary, I would be pretty sure to bet that it wouldn't have gone anywhere, because he wouldn't have taken a generative step to get other people engaged. In such
very
a small
clear
way as well.
Yeah, very clear. And then the fifth point.
And the fifth, right. The fifth is a really, really interesting one, and it's going to tie into how we can really make an effective step. The fifth is to think about, suppose this step was having a good effect. What would be the tiny signs of progress I'd notice over the next few days? Tiny signs of progress I'd notice over the next few days. And this is not a question that we habitually get into. You know, when we're talking about transforming the world and transforming ourselves and bringing change around, often we get into these conversations about what can I do? And the small step conversation is about what can I do. But it should also be about the impact of what will I do, or what would I like the impact to do? Because if I'm going to take a small step and the universe is going to give me a little positive response, I think I want to know what to look out for. And so this is about thinking, suppose my small step was slightly moving things in the right direction. What would be the tiny signs I might notice over the next few days? So this is not just 24 hours. It's a bit longer now. We'll give the universe time to have a breath and respond. And it's good to list these things as part of your action setting. And I think we might be going to try this out a bit later in the call, and we can. I'll work with you to create a good small action and small step, and we can try this out. But here's the idea: tiny signs of progress. What would they be? Have a think, because then you'll know what to look out for. And the famous French scientist Louis Pasteur, who invented the pasteurization of milk, to removing germs from milk by heating it up, and therefore making it much, much safer to drink. He once said, in the field of observation, chance favors the prepared mind. Chance favors the prepared mind. And so if you know what you're looking for, you have a much better chance of spotting it. And this is in our everyday experience. You think you're going to buy, you know, you might go to buy a VW Beetle, and all of a sudden you start noticing VW Beetles because they're in your mind. Yeah. So if we can be having in mind what we're looking out for, much better chance of spotting it. And that then will give us more clue about the impact of our small step. Do we want to carry on? Do we want to do more? Do we want to build on it? And so on.
When you spoke to us, Mark, years ago, you used the example of Toyota, and that really stuck in my mind. Tell us quickly, if you could, the Toyota story and why it was so important for you as an example of this.
Well, Toyota, of course, Martin, pride themselves on their way of doing the Toyota way of doing things. And Toyota is part of this Toyota way, are always improving things. They're always looking to improve things. And often with small steps. And so each new Toyota, might look the same as the old Toyota, but it has some like 20,000 tiny, tiny, tiny improvements. And each little improvement on its own might be very insignificant, but together the 20,000 little improvements add up and stack up to an enormous transformation. And it's about thinking about how big these things can become cumulatively. And I was very delighted to hear that Toyota were using some of my work, the solutions focus, which is a set of ideas around building positive change in tough situations that includes small steps. Toyota were using solutions. I discovered this, some pieces of Toyota were using solutions focus. And Toyota, they're the gods of lean management. You know, they have so many tools in their Toyota way. I was really surprised that they could find space for another one.
We'll talk about your solution focus and how people can get in touch with you at the end of the interview.
Yeah. But they were saying that, and I asked the person who worked with Toyota, when do you use this idea? And they said, oh, we use this idea of small steps when nothing else works. when we're really, really, really stuck, we use solution focus and we look for a small step. And once you find one small step, you can find another one. And then when you have two small steps, you're not stuck anymore.
No, it's brilliant because I remember Toyota years ago when they started first bringing their cars over to North America, and they were junk, they were crap, and nobody would buy them. And they started to do this tiny. I remember in your talk you talked about.
Yes, right. So actually, I thought that might have been Honda, but Honda and motorcycles. But the basic allegory is right. The manufacturer concerned that they were bringing large. They were bringing large motorcycles to the United States in the 1960s to try and sell them. And of course, in the United States, people rode Harleys and other big machines. Very difficult for Honda to compete. But they said Americans, they ride large motorcycles. Let's take them large motorcycles. And they did, and the large motorcycles didn't sell. But the Honda people who were running the show also brought with them some little kind of runaround scooter things, which had never been seen in the United States before. And they used them for getting around the cities. And the story goes that people kept stopping them to say, where can I buy one of those little tiny scooter things? And they'd say, oh, no, you can't, but we just use these. You need to buy a large motorcycle that we have in the showroom. And in the end, of course, the Honda people twigged that they should stop trying to sell large motorcycles and instead import small scooters, which were a new market, but actually a market that people wanted. And so the whole of Honda's success in the United States was built on small runarounds to start with.
I remember you talking about, you know, they would save like 13 seconds or 3 seconds or they would, you know, a cost savings of half a penny or a penny, which on the face of it was, you know, ridiculous. And yet, the phrase you used earlier, the momentum built.
There's another
culture.
Good example more recently with the British cycling team, road racing and track cycling team. Over the last 20 years, they've become almost unstoppable in winning gold medals, winning world championships. And 20 years ago, the British cycling team was nowhere, and they did it with this concept of tiny improvements, incremental gains. And it began with Chris Boardman in 1992 having a special bike built by Lotus that actually had aerodynamic tubes on it, and nobody had ever seen an aerodynamic cycle tube. Cycle tubes were always round before that, so things like, and also the helmets that were aerodynamically shaped, and they worked over 20 years, and they're still doing it. To these tiny shavings of gains that on their own make hardly any difference. But when you add them up, all of a sudden that's the difference between world records and gold medals and world championships and also RAMs.
You said, Mark, in the time we have left, just a couple of minutes, that in our pre-interview you said that heaven on earth lives in the zone between the big and the tiny.
Yeah, and so it's tempting to think of the big and the tiny as like opposite ends of a spectrum, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you imagine a spectrum where you have huge at one end, middle-sized every day in the middle, and tiny at the other end. I'd like everyone who's listening to this call to imagine that scale, but bent around, so it forms a ring. If you imagine you bend that thing around, so the middle-sized things are on one side of the ring, And on the other side, you've got a place where the huge and the tiny touch together. Yeah, so the thing is not a line, it's a circle now. And there's a place where the huge and the tiny touch together. And I think that's a place where very, very interesting things can happen. As I say, the everyday, ordinary progress we do with the middle-sized things. But the ways that the world gets changed, the ways that the world gets transformed, is with this combination of the huge and the tiny. And the Buddhists and others have had this idea for a long time, this idea, that, for example, that, yes, you can seek perfection, but if you do seek perfection, you should seek it in something very, very ordinary, like a cup of tea. And I'm lucky enough to go to Japan sometimes to work, and I've struck by the way that if you go to a very, very nice Japanese restaurant, all the plates and the bowls and things they give you are all handmade, and they're all slightly different. And in the Japanese tea ceremony, there's this idea of appreciating the bowl that you're going to be served your tea in before the tea arrives, and enjoying the bowl because it's handmade, because it's slightly different, it's unique, and it's something there to be appreciated. And so, you know, we're tempted to think in terms of, oh, I want to seek perfection in an enormous Ferrari or an amazing house with a swimming pool or something. Actually, I think that there's a lot in this idea of seeking perfection, seeking heaven on earth, in the everyday, in the tiny. And building from there, it's not to say that there isn't bigger things, there aren't bigger things involved here, but we should seeking these things in the tiny, both in terms of our actions, in terms of the signs that we're seeking, and in terms of the space that we create to look. And in the Japanese tea ceremony, whole part of the process is there's space to appreciate the beautiful tea bowl that you're being offered. And creating that space to look is another very important part of this whole process, I think. So when we've thought about our tiny signs of progress, the tiny signs that we're hoping the small step will create, we also need to take space and time to just look. Maybe they're there. Maybe some of them are there. Maybe they're there in beginning forms. Maybe they're there, but they're slightly different. Maybe they're hiding around the corner. I don't know. But there's something about slowing down enough to look that also seems to me to be vitally important in this process. And if we're rushing around looking for our tiny signs, we're going to just step on them. That's the risk. It's like stepping on a tiny ant or something. Whereas if we're very careful and cautious and stop and look, then we might see them. And then we might get an idea for actually what's the impact I'm having with my small steps, and how can I build, and how can I go on, and how can I make the most of the chance I have here.
Mark, let me ask you, here's a magic wand for you. What's heaven on earth for you?
I mean, of course, this is an enormous question, and it's one I always enjoy grappling with. I mean, I think if I'm thinking about that today, I'm thinking about Carl Sagan's famous pale blue dot picture, where he arranged for one of the Voyager space probes to take a picture of the Earth from like somewhere out, almost outside the solar system, and you can just see it. And there's this pale blue dot, this tiny, tiny, tiny blue dot in this black background, and it's to do with us all recognizing somewhere that you know, for all our squabbles and all our strife and all our differences and so on, that we on this planet have more that unites us than divides us. And the realization and the playing out of that realization is a hugely long and painful sometimes process with many setbacks. But it is something that there is progress about, you know, up and down and to and fro. So it would be something about, for me, this idea of there's more that unites us than divides us, becoming a bigger idea. even bigger idea as we go forward.
Very clear, very clear. How can people find out about your work, Mark?
Well, I've been talking about the solutions focus way of working, which includes small steps very specifically. My book, The Solutions Focus, is out there, and I have a website at sfwork.com. That's SF for Solution Focus, sfwork.com. And my latest book is on the paradigm of leading as a host rather than a hero or a servant. And that has a nice chapter called A User's Guide to the Future in it. And that pulls together a lot of this work on the big and the tiny in one chapter with lots of nice practical exercises and illustrations. So that's, if you're interested in small steps, folks, that's another thing to look out for. The book is called Host by Mark McCurgo and Helen Bailey, and it's out there. Go check it out.
Lovely. And also the hostleadership.com, is that still
up? Yes,
and
there's a website connected with that book, and that is hostleadership.com, exactly, hostleadership.com. Thank you.
Mark, thank you. You know, I adore you. I just to have someone go into the such depth and such sublime distinctions about what is a small, tiny step is miraculous. And for me, clearly a major contribution. You know, let's put it this way. A tiny step is a huge contribution.
Thank you very much, Martin. It's a nice thought. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark, so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for Co-Creating Heaven on Earth, brought to you by the Shift Network. To add this powerful collection of teachings to your personal library, visit heavenonearthsummit.com and click Upgrade. To learn more about our global community of people awakening to their divine humanity and taking inspired action, visit theshiftnetwork.com. We're grateful for your support and for sharing this life-changing information with your friends and family.